Rebag, your premier destination for luxury resale. Elevate your style with our curated collection of bags, watches, and fine jewelry. At Rebag, quality is our priority. Each piece meticulously vetted and verified by experts, ensuring your investment is nothing short of perfection. Buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Hermes, Chanel, and Cartier. Access expertly crafted and hard-to-find pieces that redefine luxury. Your next investment awaits at Rebag. Get 10% off your first purchase with code REBAG10. That's 10% off the luxury you deserve. Don't miss out. Head to Rebag.com and enter code REBAG10 at checkout. That's REBAG10.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hi, welcome to The Guinea Pig. I'm Dr. Mariam Zamani, an oculoplastic surgeon and aesthetic doctor.
And I'm Fiona Golfer, a writer and journalist. I'm no stranger to a cosmetic procedure, and I'm willing to try pretty much anything.
Which is why I'm here, to make sure Fiona and anyone else that's out there considering a treatment to help make a better informed decision safely and to try and collect as much information as they can.
Every fortnight, this podcast comes to you from Mariam's clinic in Chelsea. If you're looking for an honest, no-holds-barred approach to invasive and non-invasive cosmetic surgery,
then the Guinea Pig is here to help you. Hi, everyone, and welcome back to the clinic for another episode of The Guinea Pig.
And joining us here today is someone who is very important to me, as I worked for her for 26 years. It's Alexandra Schulman, who was the former editor-in-chief. Is it editor-in-chief? I never know if we use that word.
Yeah, it's editor-in-chief.
Editor-in-chief of British Vogue magazine. And Alex has come here today to chat to us about everything that she's doing at the moment.
Welcome.
Thank you. So happy to have you. Great to be here. Never been in a room like this.
Which is sort of why I'm very, very amused to see you in here, Alex, because one of the reasons that we've asked Alex to come here today is not only to talk about this amazing collaboration that you've done with Boots Number 7, which we will get to, but also the fact that in all the years that I worked for you at Vogue, tweakments was not something that I would describe as being your favourite thing in any sense of the word. I mean, I've never really known you express any interest in doing any of the things that so many of us are sort of rather excited by, such as, you know, in the early 90s when we all started with the Botox, followed by facials, followed by peels, scrubs, manicures, massages. None of these things I would have as your sort of top favourite things to spend your time doing. Would you agree?
Quite like a pedicure, actually. In fact, I really love a pedicure, and I quite like a manicure. But scrubs, nope. Facials, nope. Peels, nope.
That's very interesting to me, given that you were sort of at the helm of a magazine that was so invested in beauty and image and very, very seductive in many ways. When you think that you're just kind of cruising through, somebody offers you something absolutely, in my opinion, delicious to do to your face, and I would see your eyes doing their famous roll and the horror of such a thing. Why do you think you were never sort of seduced, as it were, into any of these treatments?
It's complicated, of course. I guess that I don't have any kind of moral feeling about not wanting to have treatments at all. They simply bore me. The time that I can spend doing something like, say, a peel or a facial or whatever, there are so many other things I'd rather be doing with my time. So when people did offer me, let's say, you know, a massage, sometimes I would do it, and always after about 10 minutes, I'd just be like, why did I say yes? You know, I just don't want to be here. So that's one reason. And then the other reason, when it actually comes to more kind of invasive or sort of not permanent, but, you know, things that you can do to yourself to make yourself look better, I think I just have a kind of psychological problem Yeah, I just don't like doing it.
And you don't like doing it because you think it's going to be uncomfortable. I mean, as we get older, and I do think you look great, Alex. So I'm just going to start
Thank
by
you.
Saying
Lucky
that.
Lucky it's podcast.
Before I dig myself in. But you've got great skin and you've got... But all around you, I think a lot of your friends and associates are having little tiny tweaks because many of them say, you know, it helps them go out of the workplace apart from anything else. So here you are, you've come out of Vogue. And you've invested a lot of your time and energy putting together this really kind of great collaboration with Boots. But it would never occur to you to do anything to maybe...
Well, makeup, I've always loved. I mean, ever since I was a teenager, the idea of sort of applying something that you can just take off, no-brainer, completely love it. It's like painting or it's like getting dressed up, and I love makeup, but when it comes to actually putting something into my body, I don't like that idea. My skin wherever on the body, or right skin, I don't like that idea. And I think it's more kind of psychological and philosophical than that as well. I just like the idea that there isn't something, I'm not getting older and I can't see it. I just want to be the person that I am. But, you know, I colour my hair. I don't have any problem with waxing my legs. I mean, I do quite invested in your eyebrows. Do things. I had microblading. Yeah, but...
Which quite surprised me, actually, that because...
Yeah, but I'm probably not going to do it again.
Okay, because it's not for sissies, microblading.
It's not like I'm scared of the pain. I mean, it wasn't painful anyway. But
so you have a high pain threshold on top of it. So you would be perfect for... No.
You're not getting out of here.
No. But actually, there are a lot of people, I think, who have that same philosophy where they want to age as they're aging, you know, just to have... They like the lines to show because they're happy lines or they're sad lines, but it's their life, you know?
I don't kind of like love my lines. I don't embrace my lines. I don't have positive feelings about them, which some people do. You know, there's a lot of stuff, you know, I love it because it shows the life I've lived. I don't feel like that about it. Sometimes I see people who've had stuff done and they look really, really great. And I think you're kind of crazy that you don't do this. But it's just something I know ultimately I'm not comfortable with. And one of the reasons, I think, is because on the whole, a lot of these treatments are to do with age, not just to do with looking better. They are to do with the fact that you don't want to appear as if you've aged. And I think you have to get real. We do age. And for me, it's important to be able to it's more like embracing that than it is my lines, the concept of age.
It's interesting to me, though, because going back to Vogue and everything that Vogue... I mean, in the days when we were at Vogue together, in the early days of, say, Botox or treatments, we didn't write about them in the magazine. We didn't cover Botox and injectables, and that was your belief. You didn't want it in the magazine. And yet we were airbrushing and tweaking models in the art room to a degree that at one point, I mean, it went really too far. And so... It's an interesting sort of debate, the idea that you were at the head of something that was presenting a certain kind of beauty whilst being kind of...
Well, actually, to interrupt, I was very, very keen to do less retouching than was done. And it was mainly the photographers, not actually in the art room, but the photographers were doing it digitally before we got the pictures. I mean, obviously, there is a kind of... You are creating images. They're unrealistic images in a fashion magazine. And I think that people do know that. It's not pretending.
Fantasy a little bit.
Yeah. It's not pretending to be reality. And at one point, I did this. It was like a video that we sent out to 13-year-olds at school, which was to take them right through from a model walking in with her lank hair, you know, no makeup, into a shoot, and everything that happened through the shoot, and then any of the retouching process afterwards to the final pictures. And one of the things that came back from the feedback from the classes at 13 was like, yeah, we know that. We don't think that, you know, we don't think that she really looks the way she looks in those pictures. So,
I want to interject because as a, you know, as a kid growing up and looking at Vogue, I always felt it was almost like a little piece of art. You know, when you walk by, I love Harvey Nichols' windows, for instance. I always think they do a great job. Or like, you know, Stella McCartney, she just put her decorations up. I think those are super fun. And I always think that that's when I was looking at an image in Vogue, for instance, I was looking at something that was really created.
Yeah. As a sort of artwork, in a way.
Well, actually, I was thinking as well, while you were talking about kind of in the early 90s with the whole grunge thing, people were just as upset when we presented models who looked like, you know, that it was the kind of heroin chic it was described as. But that was a kind of no makeup as you were, and people were absolutely horrified at that. So there's no...
No pleasing
anybody out there.
I love the grunge look.
And it's also interesting to me. I wanted to know what you thought about, you know, having been at the helm of something that did present this sort of perfect world, and you talk about these girls saying that they know that. How do you feel when you see and hear all of this stuff about sort of what Instagram is now doing with all of its filters and the message that that's giving? Because I think it's come from this desire to create perfection as well.
Yeah, well, I think it's quite problematic. I do think that people know what's going on in Instagram. They know they've got the filters. Everyone knows what they can edit. They know these aren't images of reality, but there still is a level at which it's such a tsunami of imagery that comes through people's Instagram feeds. And given in a way that you've all got the same tools, what you've done is you've raised the bar so that everyone can make themselves look better through the tools. But who's going to look the best out of looking better? So it's not, that's not very helpful, particularly for young people. But actually, I think that kind of insecurity about how you appear hits people of every age. And I suspect it's made it harder to some extent for a lot of both men and women, in fact, to feel kind of comfortable about themselves. So maybe partially my attitude is kind of like, I don't want to compete because that way I don't have to win.
Yes,
I can understand. But actually the Instagram thing I think is really a disaster too, because whereas in Vogue that was that was at a different level, whereas as opposed to Instagram, which anybody can be. So you're looking at other people who are your peers, and you don't necessarily know what's been curated and what's been not. And you can do so much with, you know, fake imagery, and you know, you can shrink your body half the size, make your breast double the size, your bottom. I mean, you can do everything. So I think that's actually a little bit more scary, because that's people trying to pretend that's normal. Whereas when you looked at Vogue, you knew that wasn't necessarily, I think that's where the danger is that when you look at Instagram and you're, you know, you don't know this girl who's 12 or 16 or 25 and she looks like she has this perfect life, but you know, everything's been borrowed and she's, you know, for whatever reason,
your peer group is unrealistic.
It's showing things that aren't necessarily true, but you can't tell that that's not true. You know, it's almost like fake news. It's terrible, I think, in that sense. Whereas Vogue is more like, that's an aspiration. Oh my God, that's like a, you know, beautiful, like I said, imagery, or, you know, like those kids would know that the models who came in did not look like that. But if you're looking at someone's Instagram who's taking 2-3 photos a day or even a week, it's different.
One of the fun things that, coming back to makeup, that life at Vogue had to offer was that because we did do an awful lot of sort of events and parties and dinners, and so come around 5 o'clock on the afternoon of any one of these occasions, an army of makeup people would kind of troop into your office, Alex, and occasionally there'd be some left over for the rest of us. That sort of the Bobby Brown team. But sometimes they'd send people that would do other editors in the magazine. It was a really kind of joyous part of the job, actually, having these, you know, those events that we had to do that we went to. Actually, the getting ready is always the best fun, I think. And you would have your makeup done. Did you like having to sort of put your face on in that way? And
actually, Hannah was the makeup artist I mainly used. Hannah Martin, who was at Bobby Brown then, and so she got to know what I liked. And then that was great because somebody, you know, I knew somebody could make me look good and I'd be comfortable with it. Now I find quite often when I do have to have makeup done, it's always a bit nerve-wracking because I think quite often it doesn't improve me because they don't know what's yes, going to work on my face. And I think if you do it all the time, you basically, you get to know exactly and you get to say to them, you know, just do this, yeah. and they'll do it. But I'm not so sure about what works and what doesn't. So I don't love having my makeup done. Again, it's a time thing. You know, I'd rather be, I don't know, having a glass of wine or reading a book or listening to music or...
Anything else?
Pretty well anything else.
You spoke to our friend Lisa Armstrong, our great mutual friend, the yes. other day about how much you enjoy makeup so much yeah. more since you've left the magazine.
Doing my own makeup.
And doing your own makeup and being playful in a way that maybe are risks that you wouldn't have taken yeah. if you were in the public eye. Is that kind of what led you into this project with Boots a bit?
Well,
tell us how you arrived at this really nice collection. I'm not just saying that because you've given me a bag of cash or anything.
Thank you. So, no, Boots came to me because they, I think, felt that their everyone knows that their skincare is really good. And, you know, their serums are really famous for being excellent and everything. But they felt that their makeup range maybe didn't have quite the same profile as their skincare. So they were quite keen to work with me because of my fashion background. And originally the idea was that the ranges would be rooted in fashion. Actually what's happened is that the packaging is rooted in two ideas I had about fashion, one of which is this kind of graphic idea that you always have, because I started working on it a year before. Now, I couldn't sort of do literally the trend of the season because it would have been out of date. So I found the two Hardy perennials, which you always get these kind of graphic, slightly edgy, sort of arty person like Marnie or like Missoni or even Armani, quite interestingly, often Italian. And then the other range was to do with this, which is like a more William Morris, sort of Victoriana-inspired thing, more like Simone Rocha or Erdem, those kind of people, more traditional looking. The actual product inside the packaging is now sort of some of the things that are really good staples, because it was felt in the end when we talked about it that there was no point doing product that actually not everybody's really going to be interested in. So we wanted to have the nice packaging, but have relatively sort of common denominator colours inside it. So you're not going to see like lime green eyeshadow in here.
But I went through it the other night because I came to your launch, which you sweetly invited me to. And I went through all the different colours and I was so kind of pleasantly surprised because they were very nice, like warm berry colours, very sheer. They go onto the skin very easily, blushes and lip glosses.
Listen, the product really is, the product is good. I mean, what I've learned working with them is that, and I guess you can do it because it's mass, you know, because it's the numbers, but their attention to detail is really, really impressive. And they put a lot of time, a lot of work into it.
And the product can afford, as you said, they can afford to invest in really nice.
So I'm trying to open this. Yeah. So this is called a shimmer palette. So it's really, really nice. And it's got, you know, it's got a nice texture.
Well, the packaging is even beautiful. It's in a mirrored gold, rose gold.
I'm sorry, but it's so well priced. I mean,
yeah, it
really is.
Yeah, it is very well priced.
And again, I think, you know, again, it's because of the numbers. So this is like 30 quid. It's a velvet kind of clutch, large velvet clutch that you can either use as a clutch afterwards or just use it to keep your makeup in.
It's a beautiful little bag.
With a teal kind of... waterproof inside, and then it's got like 8 products in it, and the other one is slightly smaller. It's based on the work of the weaver Annie Albers. I don't think Annie Albers would have been particularly impressed to see herself as a makeup bag.
I love this one. This is my one that I like. Yeah. It's more contemporary.
So this is for the arty edgy person.
That's
and
me.
It's
very nice color.
And again, I think, you know, afterwards.
Oh, I like that's a me color.
You take
too.
Your makeup to the beach or whatever in this. But my favourite, just before we
looking
stop
very good
talking
on Fee.
About number 7, is this little tin, which is like
beautiful.
Kind of dusty pink base with this lovely teal top. It's a tin. It's got four products in it: blusher, blusher, mascara, lip gloss, and a kind of dark navy eyeshadow. But I mean, that tin is just the perfect tin. It's going to be. I'm buying it for a lot of people for Christmas. The awful thing is that if you do something like this, you and you give it to people, they think you got it for free. They'll never know.
That you actually
paid good money for it.
Well, the thing that I love, my takeaway on it, I don't know about you, Marion, if you've had time to go through everything, but is that I like to do, I don't really like to, I've said it before here on the show, that I don't really like to wear base
makeup
very much.
No.
Yes.
But I do like to do kind of a smoky eye. And so my eternal search is for the soft coal that I can put inside my eye that will smudge under my
eye. That's very smudgy.
And it's such a fantastic smudgy eye pencil that they use. And
I've not tried it. I'm going to try. I love
the
smudgy
eye pencil. Eye pencil for years. And all the kind of big brands who I've also bought and tried, you know, with the big expensive names, I don't think I've ever used an eye pencil that I enjoy. You see how it's smudged?
Beautiful.
You can't see everybody out there, but it just smudges really, really nicely, and it's soft. And you know that you can work it, as it were, that you can kind of really smudge.
It's funny because I do wear base. I mean, one of these has got a primer in it, but none of them have got foundation. None of them have got any base or moisturizer because it's too difficult for different
colouring.
skin tones.
I don't know what primer is for.
Primer. Okay, so primer is.
Oh, I love Alex teaching us about makeup.
You put it on your skin, and it's like it acts as the base. So that when you put your foundation on or your makeup on, it doesn't just sink into your skin. It's like almost a non-permeable level on top of your skin. So everything sits on that.
So you put foundation on top of primer.
Yeah.
See, I would have used
I've never known what a primer... Yeah, I always hear about primer. Primer's like sort of confuses me, like...
You know when you're painting a chair or something, rather, you have to put like a base cover thing on it before you put the paint on it so it doesn't stick in the grain. It's like
Marianne's
that.
Often to be found painting a chair, aren't you, Marianne? She's always saying, I've just come from painting a chair in the backyard. Aww. No, but yes, I know what you mean.
I know what you mean.
Yeah. Or your nails, actually. Base cut.
Base coat on the nails.
Same kind of thing.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
But I think it's gorgeous. I was really pleasantly surprised
because I have lived
with you through the process of it being, you know, you designing it.
I'm pleased with it.
And so it's really nice to see that your friend not only does something, but does it, as always, Alexandra, very well, very well.
So interesting to note, too, that it took a whole year to do this.
Yes, it took... From the point we had I had the first meeting, went up to Nottingham to meet them. That was about October. And they arrived in October. It was very slow. There was a lot of backwards and forwards on the packaging, though. It wasn't so much the product. And interestingly, there was a stage where it turned out that some ingredient that goes into mascara, there was a worldwide shortage of.
Oh.
So they were having problems with the actual creation of the of the mascara, which I thought was fascinating. What kind of ingredient would that be?
But you run out of... Alex, so it's now over 2 years since you left, or we left, Brexit, as we like to call it, since we left the magazine.
Yeah.
And you didn't really, I don't think, you didn't come out with a plan, did you? I mean, you did say you might learn to drum, but I haven't noticed any signs of it. Wasn't drumming one of the things you'd never tried?
Drumming's what I'm about to start
doing. Are you really?
I thought I was making a joke. No, for real.
She never
That's
fails
amazing.
To amaze me.
For real, I booked my first lesson next week. No, there were lots of things I wanted to do of that kind, you know, play the guitar, write poetry, all of those kind of things. But actually, in the end, I have mainly been working, but just different kind of work. And I mean, the big difference is if you've been in an office, 26 years at Vogue, but, you know, before that, there was another 10 years before that, I'd never had days where I made my own timetable or created my own existence or felt like somebody that didn't have a sort of carapace of the place where I was working to kind of shelter me. So it's been so lovely to experience that, you know, really exciting.
Do you think, many people say to me, you know, did you feel defined by the job? And I used to say, no, I don't feel defined by Vogue. And then I came out and collapsed because I absolutely did feel defined by Vogue. I just didn't know it. And do you think that you had to go through a process where you had to sort of stop being defined by having been the editor at Vogue? It's a very big thing to carry, that kind of a title.
No, I don't think I did. I think all of that thing that you're talking about went on before I left. I mean, for years before. You know, I probably been thought about it for about 3 or 4 years before I actually did it. And I went through all that thing about what will I be without Vogue? Can I exist? How will I earn any money? You know, will I be able to kind of take care of myself, and will it be the end of everything? You know, that went round and round and round in my head for a very long time. The day I made the decision to do it, from that point onwards, I had none of that. I just felt like, yay, let's get on with it.
Do you miss the clothes? Do you miss the shopping of it and that?
She's making a
mystified face. But do you miss that sort of, I've got to, you know.
No.
No, that's what I love about you, Alex.
No, I mean, I've got lots of clothes.
Has your style changed since you come out? You're wearing an incredibly pretty dress that I've never seen before today.
Yeah, it's nice, isn't it?
Yeah, it's really nice.
But it's green, the kind of dress that I would never have worn at Vogue. So it's like a brush cotton, sort of black watch tartan, sort of smocky dress.
Yeah.
Which I bought in a store around the corner from me.
Is that one of those things you wrote about it quite recently? Yeah. You bought three dresses. Yeah. Very, very nice, that dress.
And,
this is a very one, yes.
But I've been writing a book all about this and the clothes and what the clothes make you feel. And so I've thought about this a lot, and the difference, the way you, how what you're doing affects the way you dress. So what I've discovered is not having that job allowed me to dress more how I wanted or felt completely I could dress. Whereas I think when I was at Vogue, there was a part of me that felt that I should be looking the way that somebody might expect somebody to look like in that role, which indeed is only professional. I mean, if you know, if you're a doctor, you think about how you should look. If you're a lawyer, you think about how you should look. I mean, it's not only about magazines, but then to be able to just dress how you, just what you feel like every day. I mean, that was so new to me.
Liberating. Funnily enough, I've known you since, we've known each other for a very, very long time, and you dress more like you did when I first met
you. Yeah, I've gone back to being a 21-year-old in every way.
Yeah, that's funny.
I'll soon be singing Joan Baez songs.
I expect nothing less. What products do you keep in your handbag? This sounds like every feature we ever wrote at Vogue, actually, this question.
Yeah.
What are your three top products
in
your handbag?
Well, I don't keep them in my handbag, but so my absolute, the thing I love, I can't get, which is a brand called Pixie, and it's a lipstick called Alva, and they don't make it anymore. And
Marianne's looking for it.
I've been through every
Pixie,
makeup,
if you're listening,
every makeup counter in London, trying to find something that is like it.
And describe it.
What was the color?
Alva, A-L-V-A, and it's a kind of slightly frosted, I have it on my lips now, it's a slightly frosted pink with a bit of brown in it. And any time that anything like it is either too pink or too brown or too frosted, and they don't make it anymore. I mean, I just So I had three, and I've now only got half of one left.
That's the worst.
I'm desperate.
But it came out today, which means it's a special occasion, I'm hoping.
No, I wear it all the time.
Because I'd stagger it. I keep it for Beth.
That's what I did with my perfume went out, and then I found it on Amazon, of all places, and I stocked
what
up.
What was it?
It was just an old Dolce & Gabbana, right. The red one, and 3 years ago they discontinued it, and I was hoarding it. I would only use it, and then I found a bunch, so now I'm using it again, but I'm scared it's going to go away. But
no, it's terrible when that happens.
Okay, so we have Pixie, which we can't find.
Okay, so the Pixie lipstick you can't find. And then a more recent love object is the Wildsmith cleanser, which is a big kind of jelly cleanser.
Wildsmith is a brand you can mostly find online.
Online, yeah.
It's great. It's very kind of natural. I like it too.
And although I'm afraid I fall into the not cleaning my face camp, I don't clean my face at night, but I will often clean it in the morning, and I like this cleanser.
Often
because,
is good.
you rub it in and it's all kind of like jelly and it smells nice and everything, and then you put a hot cloth on and clean it all off, and then you do feel clean to start the day.
Okay, that's two.
That's two. And then, well, my absolute staple, I've used it since I was 25, I guess, is, and I just swear by it, makes you look different, is Clarins Beauty Flash. I mean, you put it on, it's like a primer, only it's not. And somehow you put it on your face and you just, every time I wear it, people say, you're looking really good. Well.
You see? The old ones are the best ones.
You know, old is gold.
Old is gold. Alex, I can't not talk about your nails, okay?
Because
looking at your nail colours. Let's ignore the chippedness, okay, and let's just discuss your colour choices on your nails, because
very
I'd say
trendy.
Every nail a different colour.
Yeah.
What talk me through the thought process behind your nails.
Okay, so I started having my nails painted regularly about a couple of months ago, actually, as a kind of stress relieving thing. It's just a very nice thing to go to the nail bar, and there are all these people around and talking, and I'm just there, and it was a way of not thinking about things that I didn't really want to have to think about, and, you know, to get away from my desk as well. So I started having my nails painted, and then I always wanted to have different colours because all my life I've worn odd things. So I used to always wear odd earrings. Again, not when I was at Vogue because I sort of didn't want to look peculiar. But actually, I've always worn odd earrings and quite often odd coloured socks and things. So I started doing odd nails. And
my
now,
eyes are now rolling in the back of my head.
And now I've got these nails. I mean, I'm sorry, they looked really nice when they were done, but they're yesterday was the last day.
I'm just amused by the colours, aren't you? You
I
must
think
have noticed
I'd love,
the colours.
I'd love
okay,
it.
So
if I
have
weren't
like
a doctor,
a little
I would wear this.
I have a little fleshy pink, sort of peachy pink on the little finger. And then this one is a, what would you call it? A sort of pinky metallic-y silver.
Yeah.
This one's a kind of gosh, what's
limey
that colour?
Kind of green.
Limey kind of
mustardy
yucky,
green.
Kind of slimy mustard green.
Yeah,
slimy mustard green, very...
This is a metallic gold, and this one is more of a kind of... Same colour, actually, as my boots tin is. It's kind of like a dusty pink.
I'm feeling very dull with my burgundy nail polish.
I'm very dull. I wish if I didn't have the job that I have, I would have different coloured nails too.
But you have to put your hands on people. So do you keep your nails pretty neutral because of
almost always, unless
treatment.
I have something short and pretty neutral.
Do you wear gloves though?
Always.
Right.
But still, I always notice that if I even wear red, and sometimes I have red on...
Yeah.
People I can see people, they notice the fact that I'm wearing red.
Yeah.
I also feel that they look at my nails because I talk a lot with my hands.
Right.
Very strange.
No, it's good.
Just back to your beauty regime, Alex, because I'm curious. I know Beauty Flash does the tightening thing, but do you also use a face cream?
Well, Beauty Flash I only use like
when you're going out.
Sometimes, because I feel if you use it too much, it won't work. There's no rationale to that. It's just how
I'm
I feel.
Beginning to go with your flow, though, Alex.
At the moment I'm loving a Chanel one. It's called Le Lift. It's a kind of pink, very light kind of moisturizer, and it's kind of cool when you put it on, and I have no idea if it's made any difference to my skin. And there's a bit of an under eye cream, but the under eye I mean, this is a bit of an issue because it's under eyes that I have the worst skin because of sunbathing and not wearing sunglasses and all of that. And I've never put eye creams on. So, I mean, I think I'm probably playing catch up a bit late in the day for that. But we'll see.
It's never too late to start.
Really?
I think that your kind of openness and honesty about the way that you look. I mean, I don't know how happy you are to talk about your bikini picture that you put up on Instagram.
Yeah.
But your lack of kind of vanity is a... and I don't mean because you look marvellous in a bikini. You look great. You look like what women look like when they go out in a bikini. But I think it's a really... You know, I know that a lot of the stuff that I do to myself is born out of probably an insecurity. And I wish I had less insecurity and thought less about what I do to myself. So I actually think that, you know, I listen to you and have done for very many years talking about these kind of things. And I always come away thinking, I wish I had such certainty about myself. Because I think it and without wanting to blow smoke out your backside... It's a real, I think it's an example to women that, you know yourself and be comfortable in your skin. You're a very smart woman.
There are so many things to say about that subject. I mean, it's so complicated, isn't it? And it's not, you know, that I think I look wonderful. It's that I try to remove how I look from a way of judging myself to some extent. I mean, not totally. Obviously, I like people to think that I look good. But I think a long time ago, really probably even as a child, I was a kind of quite dumpy child. I wasn't like Miss Tinkerbell. You know, I was large and, you know, I had early puberty, so I started having boobs before anyone else, and I was kind of clunky and everything. And I think that I just probably at that point decided that I wasn't going to, I had to be judged by something else. And that probably was quite helpful, actually.
Unbelievably helpful, especially going into the world that you went into, because I think going in knowing that, I know as well as any how judgmental the world of fashion can be. So I think that your strength was that you didn't pitch yourself against those people in trying to prove in any way that how you... And I don't mean it's how you look because you don't look like them, but you just... That wasn't your game.
But it wasn't sort of... I didn't think about it as a, you know, as a battlefield exactly. Everyone has different experiences of it, don't they? I mean, I think I was very lucky that... I was always perfectly nice looking, but I was never raging beauty. I was always lucky that I was quite successful and I had good relationships, you know, and I had boyfriends. I didn't sort of find that it was a sort of a major problem having a boyfriend. I don't know. I mean, I really honestly, you could really write a book about this subject. I mean, it's just so interesting. But I know that my takeaway from it is that I feel so strongly that it is very, I think it's important for women to do whatever they, and men, whatever makes them feel good. And if it makes them feel good to have any kind of treatments or put makeup on or whatever they want to do makes them feel good, that's absolutely fine by me. I do think, though, it is important to try and look outside your appearance to get your sense of self and to judge yourself by, because there's something more kind of,
I mean, beauty is fleeting anyway.
Yeah. Like
that's why everybody is scared to get old, because they lose a little bit of their identity as they age, if that's what they put their worth into.
Well, you must find, you know, have a lot of conversations like this with, you know, your patients and just people that you meet within the world, you know, this whole discussion.
I mean, I always say, I always tell people, whatever you come in here to do with me is because you want to do it. So I always say, what is it? I ask them a couple questions. One is what they like about themselves, and then what is it that they would want to change about themselves? And when people ask me, well, what do you think I should do? Doesn't matter. You might not ever see me again. Why do you care what I think, you know, one way or the other? You come here for a reason. I mean, obviously some things made you book the appointment, walk into this door, and you have an idea of what bothers you. And if nothing really bothers you, then you shouldn't really be looking for something to find in actuality, you know? So
I mean, if I came in here and I was doing that, you know, I would do something about the way my mouth turns down there. And I know how easy that would be. You know, if I just did something, then I'd look happy instead of looking disgruntled all the time. And, you know, and I do think about it. And then I kind of think, oh, but I don't know. What will it be like when it runs out? And...
That's always a big question. Well, you can always just walk around smiling, and then that takes care of all the...
Yeah, smiling helps.
Yeah, smiling.
But as things evolve, and I mean, I know we never seem to get through an episode without talking about Profilo. And
what is Profilo?
Profilo is something that, you see, I think would suit you very well. Profilo is you have five little injections in your face.
On each side of your face.
And it's kind of basically, it's moisturizer in a needle. Mm-hmm. And it's unbelievably hydrating and mm-hmm. moisturizing. There's no filler. It's no nothing.
Why would you do it?
To just hydrate the skin from inside. So basically,
so does it just go throughout your whole face?
Then? So the idea is you put it in key points within the skin, and then it dissipates and spreads. And it's a form of hyaluronic acid, which then promotes your own collagen mm-hmm. and your own skin to make more skin, essentially. And it is one of those things that just gives you, when you when you wake up and you're like, oh, I'm having a good skin day. I don't look so bad.
It's kind of dewiness it gives you.
That's a non-filler type of
thing. We're not going to force you into it. Don't you worry.
Could be the thin end of the wedge.
It could be the thin end. The Mariam's always here.
I am, actually. It's like my second home.
So I'm very excited. I wanted to say that I think your makeup collaboration...
My number seven.
Actually, you know what's really nice about the collaboration is I always like having something that I can keep afterwards. And so I buy... I'm a makeup junkie. I don't know why I buy it, because I almost wear nothing, and I don't know how to put it on. But I love the containers that things come in.
Oh, really?
And this tin, for instance, is super cute, and I love it.
Thank you.
But well done, and I think that they'll be a huge success.
Thank
all this makeup
much.
In this little bag.
We'll put some pictures, actually.
Yeah,
we should.
Some
pictures
Absolutely.
Of Alex's range on our Instagram if anybody wants to have a look. But it's very, very pretty. And
the lining.
Just to say thank you for coming
in,
Alex.
Thank you so
much.
It's
very exciting.
Thanks for having me. It's been great. I've learned stuff.
I know
about what's it called? Profiler.
Profiler. I'm going to send you a list, Alex. So don't forget to follow us on Instagram at the Guinea Pig Podcast. Plus you can email us at theguineapigpod@gmail.com, and we'll see you, or you'll hear us, next week.
Thank you. Bye.
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 The Guinea Pig provides unbiased information to those who may be considering cosmetic surgery or even trialing a non-invasive treatment or product. We do not endorse the use of any product or procedure featured in this podcast and are not responsible for the outcome of any of the treatments featured on this podcast or damage caused in connection with any treatments or products. Should you decide to try any of the procedures, treatments or products mentioned in any episode of The Guinea Pig, you do so at your own risk. Always consult an independent and fully qualified medical professional if you are considering embarking on a medical procedure, irrespective of whether it's an invasive or non-invasive procedure.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hey folks, it's Mark Maron from WTF. I've been talking to all kinds of famous people in my garage since 2009, including a sitting president.
You know, I don't imagine you were flying in here on the chopper thinking like, you know, I am nervous about Mark.
No, I wasn't.
Okay, well, that's good.
That would be a problem.
It would be a problem.
If the president was feeling stressed about
it. Coming to my garage.
Coming to your garage.
And now there's even more WTF when you subscribe to the full Marin to get weekly bonus content and all WTF episodes ad-free. Listen to WTF wherever you get podcasts and subscribe to the full Marin at go.acast.com/WTF.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.